Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Well, the race for the Senate between Scott Brown and his likely Democratic opponent Elizabeth Warren is certainly this year's big political story in Massachusetts. That said, tomorrow the presidential race comes home to Massachusetts as part of Super Tuesday, when voters from 10 states head to the polls. And we're going to spend the next few minutes talking about both those stories with our regular political team. Susan Tracy, our Democratic analyst. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Anthony. How are you?
Good. Good to have you. Thanks. And Jack Clancy, our Republican analyst. Good to have you back, Jack.
Good to be here, Anthony.
So before we get to Super Tuesday, let's start with the latest in the race for the Senate between Republican Scott Brown and his likely opponent, Elizabeth Warren. A new survey from the Western New England University Polling Institute puts Brown ahead of Warren 49-41. That's the latest of several polls showing, you know, a noticeable Brown lead. Still several months to go, obviously, before the election. But what do you make of Brown being ahead right now? What does it tell you, Susan Tracy?
You know, really not surprising. He's the incumbent United States senator. You know, I think he's sort of officially engaged in campaigning within the last, month or so.
Sure.
So, you know, not surprising. You have an edge when you're an incumbent. You have sort of access to a lot more free media, certainly, than Elizabeth Warren does. And, you know, it's really early in the race.
It is early. But, Jack Clancy, what's your state? It seemed like that early batch of polls seemed to give Elizabeth Warren a little bit of a bump or an advantage. Now, not so much.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think I am a little bit surprised because of the early batch of polls that gave her such a strong showing before there was a primary or anything. I think she was up by 10 or 12 in some poll, and I hadn't heard anything for a couple of months, so I was kind of surprised. I think we've seen a 9-point and a 10-point lead in the past couple of weeks for Brown, so he's turned the corner. Of course, he did just sort of start up his candidacy again just a few weeks ago in January, I believe.
Well, one of the big issues that has divided these two recently in this early stage of the campaign is the debate over contraception and insurance coverage. Senator Brown co-sponsored the Blunt Amendment that would have provided a moral exemption clause for insurers that failed last week. Do you think this issue helped him in any way? Maybe that's one of the things that's reflected in this poll. What do you think, Susan?
No, I don't think it helps him at all. And I think in the long run, it probably hurts. My guess is that people don't understand what the Blunt Amendment did and the scope that it has, that it, you know, effectively allows any company to pull out of the insurance mandate if they have moral objections to it. This is not a religious issue. This is a personal issue from an employer perspective. Mm. So I think if people, come to understand that, that will seem like a pretty out of step position to be in as a senator from Massachusetts. Mm.
So, Jack, why did Brown seize on this as an issue?
I have to tell you, I'm also surprised that he backed the Blunt Amendment. I mean, even beyond politics, he has a wife and a couple of daughters, and I would think that would influence his feelings as well. I have a wife and two daughters, and I know where they stand on the Blunt Amendment.
Yeah,
and
they'd be not, blunt about their feelings.
It's not with the Blunt Amendment.
Well, that's why it's called the Blunt Amendment.
Yes, exactly.
So given that he's also tried to prove to be a moderate, it's a little surprising. But if you look within the poll that you just mentioned, apparently he still holds well with women. It didn't change. The poll came out after the Blunt Amendment. So I guess I would have to agree with Susan that I think perhaps people aren't aware of what's in the Blunt Amendment.
Mm. Well, listeners, we're going to be talking about politics for the next 10 or 15 minutes. Now we want you to join the conversation. We're talking about the race for the Senate in Massachusetts and about Super Tuesday and the Republican primary. Have you been satisfied with the election process so far? And when we're talking about the process, we're talking about the Republican campaign primary. Do you think that the best candidate will emerge, and has the protracted adversarial race that we've seen so far helped or hurt the Democratic process? You can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So let's move on to presidential politics. Today, all four major Republican candidates were on the campaign trail ahead of Super Tuesday tomorrow, when 10 states, including Massachusetts, will cast primary ballots.
It's great to be here in Ohio. We could have a good day tomorrow in Ohio. What do you think?
In Ohio, we'd like to get delegates. And then in other states, I think we have some shots at actually carrying the state. It's very fluid and, I think, beginning to really move in our direction.
I certainly have some disagreement with the others, but I think we all agree that it's a good idea to get rid of our current president and put in a Republican. There's no doubt.
If you think this campaign against President Obama is going to be about the economy and jobs and government being too big, then I'm the guy you need to nominate.
And that's former Massachusetts Senator Mitt Romney, of course, speaking today in Ohio. Before that, we heard former Senator Rick Santorum, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, and Ron Paul, Texas Congressman Ron Paul. So, Susan, Jack, tomorrow Mitt Romney can go a long way towards sealing this deal. What does he have to do Super Tuesday to be regarded as a good day for him? Jack Clancy.
I think he probably needs to win Ohio in the popular vote. Mm-hmm. He's going to do very well in the delegates there no matter what, because Santorum is not even able to attain 18 of the delegates because he didn't get signed up properly in the state. So he's going
to... That's a huge detail, too. I mean, for someone who's trying to make a case for being able to organize a national campaign, it's like, talk about oops.
Yeah, he has that oops and oops in Virginia that he and Gingrich both had. So obviously Romney's going to take Virginia. 42, 43 delegates. He needs to win Ohio. I think that would be big. And I think the way the surge has been going for him over the weekend, what with the Washington win and the four wins in a row, I think there's a real chance he could possibly take Ohio. It's a toss-up by most people's account. I think the real thing that he could make a real statement on is Tennessee. Mm. He's been down by 10, 15, 20 points in Tennessee. It's a southern state, and you don't expect him to do well, but he's been creeping up there. If he somehow wins Tennessee, I think that says a lot.
Hmm. Well, yeah, go ahead, Susan.
You know, I would argue that it is amazing to me when you look at the 10 states tomorrow that all this rides on Ohio for Romney. Romney is going to win Vermont, Massachusetts, and Virginia tomorrow. There are three caucuses tomorrow. He probably comes out winning in North Dakota. He probably wins in Idaho, which has a large Mormon population. He's doing well in Tennessee as a Massachusetts Massachusetts Republican. And the fact that we're going to judge this all in Ohio, to me, is a loss for Romney. It's pretty amazing that if he loses there, he could be seen as a loser on a night when he's going to win, and presumably Gingrich wins Georgia. What does Santorum really have going for him tomorrow, other than maybe Ohio?
Well, this is the question I have, because let me read you Glenn Johnson, who, by the way, is a political reporter who I respect very, very much. He wrote on Boston.com today, despite outraising the Republican field, despite big wins in New Hampshire, Florida, Nevada, and Michigan, Romney continues to be one loss away from renewed talk of a brokered convention.
Absolutely.
Or the late entry of a candidate. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. It's amazing to me that despite winning, despite, you know, raising money, victories, he's got a couple of endorsements today. Yeah. The party continues to look for someone else. It's just amazing.
I mean, is it that the party is continuing to look, or is it, or I mean, maybe it's the same thing. Romney just can't seem to shake that idea that he is sort of one loss away from a brokered convention when it seems to me like he's in pretty good shape. I mean, it hasn't been a slam dunk for him, but he's been marching steadily along, with this delegate count.
Yes, 55% of the delegates, and with three other people behind you, that's very good. If you stayed at a 55% count, you'd get done a couple of races before the convention. You have to expect some momentum, so I think obviously he can do well before then. Today he's going to get at least 50% again, so he's going to stay in that 55% range, and if he gets lucky, he could end up with maybe 60% today. So, yeah, that's a commanding lead, really. But I agree with Susan and you, Anthony. I don't understand it, frankly, why they can't get behind him.
Yeah, I still believe he's the nominee. I just think it's pretty incredible that we're in March and they're still looking for somebody else. It doesn't bode well for November, and certainly the polls illustrate that.
Well, let me play a clip from Saturday Night Live. It sort of speaks to this issue. It's an actor who's supposed to be Mitt Romney talking about the big win in Michigan. Let's listen.
How do you feel about the Michigan win?
Well, we feel great. Michigan was just another case of voters taking a look at Mitt Romney and saying, I guess.
Well, anyway, so you get the point. I mean, he can't seem to shake that image, right?
that win in Michigan actually could have been bigger. And the whole call for Democrats to come to the polls turned out 9% of Democrats did come to the polls. And Santorum got 53% of that. That translated to 3.5% more. Had he gotten those votes, he would have had a 6 or 7 point win, which would have been a much bigger win. I'm wondering how much of this, where we allow the independents and the Democrats to come to the Republican primaries, is hurting him. I think it's a small amount, but when you're talking 2 or 3%, it can change things.
Yeah, but the flip side to that is that in some ways I feel like the Republican Party, the real problem has been that everything about these primaries including super PAC funding, continues to pull these candidates further and further to the right, and I think making them just less electable. It's a, you know, I think the common wisdom right now is Obama's in the strongest position, and certainly a few months ago, no one in the Republican Party would have picked that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that super PAC funding, because in a lot of ways, that's one of the big explanations why this has been able to extend so long and to sort of keep the level of criticism going and the questioning of Romney's sort of what seems like otherwise an inevitable march toward the primary. Don't you think, Jack?
I have to agree that Gingrich and Santorum have their sugar daddies, I guess.
Yes.
Sugar daddies. Adelson, $10 million for Gingrich and Foster Friess and William DeRay for another $3 or $4 million. The super PAC thing has changed things a great deal. Ron Paul, $2.6 million from a San Francisco benefactor. There are people in this race who would never have been in a race this deep, counting on just normal money. Romney, of course, has his super PAC, and he's doing well, too. And President Obama has signed on to the super PAC concept. After waggling his finger at the Supreme Court over Citizens United, he has jumped into the super PACs.
Well, if you can't beat him, join him.
That's the way it is.
I guess, yeah. Susan, what's your take on this? Because on the, I guess you could look at it one of two ways. I mean, are these candidates damaging each other? And what state is Romney going to be in when he gets, presumably, to the nomination? Or is this a good sort of healthy vetting process in an otherwise vigorous Democratic process?
You know, normally I would say that a tough primary can be very good for a candidate. It does make, you know, I think, you know, Romney spoke to this, I think, after Florida, where, you know, he's talked about this making him stronger. But this is different. The amounts of money being spent and the ability to hide behind these third-party entities doing all the dirty work while they rip apart your opponents is nothing but destructive. And it makes the candidates, you know, after primaries are over, one of the other keys to victories is being able to mend a fence with your opponents and hold hands and work together. And, you know, certainly Hillary Clinton did that with Barack Obama. Very different kind of race, by the way, Obama-Clinton. You know, two candidates that, you know, the party was wildly engaged about. No one where we don't want someone to win was the, you know, was what was motivating the voters on it. But this has just been ugly, destructive, negative. I don't see how anyone could argue this is good for a party or for candidates. Mm.
I think the vitriol is backing off a little. I think Gingrich, for one, has backed off considerably. I don't know why this actually, unfortunately for him, the delegates have gone with it. But he's backed off it a bit. I think even Santorum, if you listen closely, the direct attacks at Romney are not quite as vitriolic. I think maybe they do see the writing on the wall. I think they'll come together. It's time heals all wounds in a month or two if Romney's the candidate, or probably more like 2 or 3 months. They'll come back together, and it'll be fine.
Well, this is the question I want listeners to engage in. Listeners, what do you think about this protracted Republican, not the so much the protracted time of the Republican primary, but how this election has sort of extended the kind of negative adversarial energy of the race? Has that been good for the process? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. So if Mitt Romney's biggest challenger, Rick Santorum, is to survive or come out of Super Tuesday with what would be a win, is it all about Ohio? Is that the only route for him?
I don't think it is all about Ohio. It would be great for him to win it. I think he's going to – there are actually a number of more southern states coming up through the rest of March where he and Gingrich are going to split a number of votes through there. The problem may be that Gingrich and Santorum are splitting the conservative vote, although I just heard something the other day that one of the polls shows if Gingrich were to drop out, slightly more delegates might actually go to Mitt Romney, which seems odd, but I think he may be more centrist than Santorum. Sheldon Adelson said if Gingrich drops out, he will be with Romney. So it's hard to see Santorum making his way through this without a couple of big wins. He kind of has to win Ohio. I think you did ask if he should. I think it would be big for him. If he doesn't, he's going to have real trouble. And if he gets beaten Tennessee, and that's not a big state, it's not a big issue, but I think Tennessee would be a real indicator that Romney can start winning in the South. Santorum could really take a beating.
Yeah, do you see, Susan, any route for Santorum, sort of any credible route for Santorum to remain the sort of number one alternative to a Mitt Romney?
Yeah, the credible route is just what we talked about. One, if you have super PAC money that can fuel you on, I'm sure he's looking down the road. I think sometime in April there's the Pennsylvania primary. He may want to hang in until then. And look, you still have to get to 1,144 votes to be the nominee, and I don't think anyone's broken 200 yet. So I think if you're, you know, putting your heart and soul into this and you're Santorum or Gingrich, you're probably not going to just, you know, say tonight I'm out and it's over.
Hmm. Well, let's take a call. We've got Bill calling from the Fenway. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how are you?
Very well.
I'm just wondering what the actual numbers of people that are going to these polls, to the Republican primaries, and are actually voting. I have a sense that the number of actual voters is way down compared to the McCain-Romney race of 4 years ago. And
yeah.
I'm just wondering why I don't hear those figures.
Bill, it's a great question. Let me turn to our experts here. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Susan, Jack, chime in here. I know that there has the overall turnout has been somewhat lower since 2004, right?
There was a lot of talk of that in the early going. I haven't heard so much recently.
Right.
I do know that Romney actually, even though he only won by 2 or 3 points the other day in Michigan, actually garnered more votes than he did against McCain.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Bill, you might be right. I think there are less number of people showing up, and you would think with four candidates, people could find somebody they would like.
That's an important question, though, isn't it, Bill's question, Susan? Because, I mean, the idea of how much excitement this Republican primary is generating could tell us something about the race in November.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny. We've talked a little bit about the race being negative, but I'd also add to it, in addition to being negative, it's off message if you're a Republican. You know, you have Romney today trying to pull it back to the economy. I'm sure that's because he's in Ohio, and that's the big issue. And so, you know, the desire to pull it back to that in Ohio is smart politics. But I think when you start talking about contraception and birth control, and that is just, if I'm in the Republican Party and care about winning in November, that is not the conversation that I want to be having right now. And I think that's problematic as well for the Republicans.
Do you agree with that, Jack?
I think I would agree. You've got to worry about November and the numbers that are turning out. Maybe, but the primary numbers, I don't know if they necessarily translate to that. So I don't know if it's going to be a problem or not. It's hard to say.
Well, what about here in Massachusetts? It's sort of kind of a non-event on Super Tuesday. I mean, the former governor obviously is expected to do pretty well. The other candidates need to break the 15% threshold in order to gain any delegates. Can any of them do that, Jack?
I don't think so. Doesn't look like it. They're talking 60 to 65 for Romney. I don't know where I read this yesterday, but I guess that someone did just a man on the street thing, and they couldn't find, with 65% of Republicans voting for him, they couldn't find anybody talking much about it.
Yeah,
we haven't seen any ads. We aren't talking about it. It's a foregone conclusion.
Neither Santorum nor Gingrich, I think, are candidates who are going to have that kind of appeal here.
And they're not going to break the 15. So I think you still don't get all of them in that case. I'm looking at my chart here. Even if you have nobody break 15, I think you still end up, at least the three at-large candidates, you don't get the delegates, rather.
All right. So final question. Polls are closed tomorrow. What does this race look like tomorrow night?
I think it's good for Romney because I think he'll do well in Ohio. I think he might win. He may win in Tennessee. He's around 200 right now. I think by tomorrow night, he may be over 400. There's something symbolic about that. The optics, if you will, today's popular term, is going to be good for him when you hit that number.
Right.
And it may mean something about momentum. I don't know.
Predicting a good night there for Romney. Jack Clancy, Republican analyst, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Susan Tracy, our Democratic analyst, thank you.
Thanks.
Stay with us. Up next, the music of Israeli funk and hip-hop band Hadag Nahash. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.